In which Arthur learns that there are always consequences. Written by Dr. Jenny 88 and read by Eos Rose. Teeth and tongues and lips, limbs slick with sweat and spit, burning fingertips scorching trails along even hotter skin, swollen mouths kissing and licking, biting and tasting. Fingers were followed by mouths, meaningless patterns being traced across both of their bodies, bodies all hard angles and soft indentations, sharp teeth and nails dragging across impossibly smooth skin, raking blurred grazes that left scars far deeper than the surface, that exquisite body arching into his, calloused fingers digging into slim shoulders and pulling him closer. It had all started with Morgana. She had petitioned Uther once again, wanting to train as a knight of all things. It was preposterous, of course, not least because knights were always male. Uther had reminded Morgana that she was just a girl, but that had made no difference. It never did. Morgana didn't seem to recognize that there were things she couldn't do, limitations of her gender. Arthur had once pointed out that there were also things she was permitted to do that he couldn't, sewing and cooking and the like. But Morgana had favored him with such a look of contempt that he hadn't brought it up since. With Morgana, asking permission was just a formality. At the next training session, she was there, wearing armor that had been adapted for a woman. Arthur had a shrewd idea where she'd got it, too, and apparently prepared to join in the men's practice. Arthur had smirked. If Morgana wanted to play the knight, he was going to let her. It would be entertaining, if nothing else. A pressure on the back of his neck as he was pulled down for another kiss, firm thighs trembling under his caress, the sweet scent of musk, heavy and cloying, the feel of that slight body subtly muscled beneath his own. He had treated her just as any of the other knights, leading them through the motions of swordplay, seeing which of them could keep pace with his steps. To his disdain, Morgana showed herself to be the match of his men. Then, on one of the last moves, she had stumbled, the pommel of her sword catching in the material of her dress. Arthur stopped the practice, calling her on the mistake. In retrospect, he should have known Morgana would hate her weakness being brought up in front of everyone. They were so alike, after all. He had held his breath, waiting for the verbal lashing that would surely come. Penance for his actions, but there was none. Arthur looked up, meeting her gaze, and her beauty was gone, replaced with a cold fury and blazing eyes that at once chilled him far more than the words he had anticipated, and excited him, igniting the curiosity within him. He had seen Morgana angry like this before. Friction and heat, a soft thumb running along his hip bone, stroking the crease behind his knee, fingers and lips everywhere but where he needed them, throbbing, aching for more, for everything, for this. He hadn't been surprised when the summons came and diligently made his way to Uther's meeting room. His father barely looked up when he entered, merely gestured imperiously towards the seat at his right hand, opposite Morgana. Arthur sat, used to gestures instead of words, orders instead of kindness. He had tried to catch Morgana's eye, but her gaze seemed riveted to the table, and Arthur gave up quickly. Uther, it emerged, wasn't angry at Arthur at all. His fury was directed at Morgana. He seethed about her direct disobedience, her ideas far above her station, her ignorance of social order. There had been a lot of shouting between the two of them, which Arthur relegated to the back of his awareness. There was nothing new there. Uther slammed his fist down on the table, the resultant vibrations sending Arthur's goblet to the floor and attracting his attention. He had listened to the lecture with all the appearance of an obedient son, indicating his agreement that he ought to have sent Morgana away as soon as he'd realized she had joined the training session, and refraining from pointing out that she would hardly have listened to him any more than she had listened to Uther. As they left the room, Morgana had caught his arm in a grip that was surprisingly strong and pulled him close to her. Her whisper that she would pay him back for his actions really did command his attention. In his experience, Morgana's threats were never empty. Wet and smooth and delectably painful as hard teeth bit down on his lower lip, pressing tightly against one another, reveling in the contact, those hands in places he never expected them to be. Things were quiet in Camelot for 3 weeks, and this worried Arthur, though he did not show it. On the outside, he was calm, continuing to train with the knights, to join the other men on hunting trips. He stepped up his antagonism towards Merlin in this time, needing something to take out his frustrations on. For his part, the manservant appeared not to care, never complaining, making it difficult to tell if he had noticed the difference at all. Arthur would have preferred a reaction, further fuel for his ill temper. He suspected Merlin knew this. On the Thursday of the third long week, Morgana summoned him to her rooms. He made his way with a heavy heart, trudging as slowly as he thought her patience would permit. The desperate anticipation he had previously felt at the prospect of an end to this waiting game, fading with every step, replaced with a kind of dread only Morgana could instill in him. He knocked, more for appearances than anything, and entered without awaiting a reply. Morgana was standing as she always was when she faced him like this. In all the years they had known one another, all the years they had played out varying versions of this game, it had never once occurred to Arthur to refuse her. He listened as she outlined her demands, the retribution for his actions. Arthur didn't interrupt her. Their relationship was different when they were like this. The need for public displays of character pushed aside. He had nothing to prove to her, nor she to him. There was an easy camaraderie between them, despite the context of their meeting, belying the lack of blood relations. She held the kind of influence over him that only an elder sister could, and, to him, she really was kin. He remained long after Morgana was done, her challenge to him plainly issued, and they spoke long into the night, discussing nothing and everything. Warm breath and cold feet and firm limbs pressed together, inelegant scrabbling as they each seek purchase, impossibly soft hair tickling his cheek, caressing and nibbling and feeling every inch of one another, exploring this new body with an unsurpassed ardor. Arthur wasted no time in setting about the completion of Morgana's challenge. He called for Merlin at daybreak, much to the young man's chagrin, and had him arrange for a horse to be saddled and readied for the meet. Merlin seemed cheerier today, despite the early hour, which suited Arthur's mood. The unresponsive Merlin of the past few weeks had been an unfavorable companion, especially with his own mind so pensive. Arthur was gradually coming to realize just how much he relied on the other boy for distraction when other areas of his life were becoming worrisome. Merlin's idiocy had its uses. The journey into the woods was an easy one, their horses cantering gently alongside one another. The two boys fell quickly into a comfortable silence, interrupted only by Merlin's cheerful comments and questions, his open wonder at the world around him, the world Arthur never looked twice at. They reached the spot Morgana had specified and dismounted. Merlin prepared an edible meal for them. Arthur was glad of the food, but gladder of the effort put into the meal. It amused him to note that Merlin had included many of his favorite foods, apparently regardless of whether they were traditionally served together or not. These small, thoughtful acts had become commonplace in Arthur's relationship with Merlin, and the prince had come to expect them in the days immediately following a period of hardship. An illness, say, or a grueling tournament. After they had eaten, Arthur withdrew a sheet of vellum, still in its frame so as to keep it taut, and rested it on his knees. Morgana had requested that he sketch the view of this site, specifically noting that he had to do it personally rather than ordering a servant to do the job for him. It was a clause Morgana never failed to add. Arthur couldn't help but smile as he recalled how he had once been so contentious of these tasks, always so personal in nature. With Morgana, it was never enough to buy her some pretty trinket, to appease her with material gifts. Arthur had previously had to stitch on an emblem of her choosing onto one of her gowns, dress as a peasant, and escort her to a party held in one of the outer villages, and write her a sonnet. There was a part of him that enjoyed these challenges, and more recently, Arthur sometimes found that he went out of his way to vex Morgana, just to see what task she would set him next. When Arthur was finished, Merlin peered over his shoulder at the sketch, before sitting back and cocking a single eyebrow at him. Arthur sighed, resigning himself to a long explanation, but then Merlin was talking again, observing that there was more to the scene than hills and trees, pointing out wildlife Arthur hadn't drawn and the distant village far enough away to reasonably ignore. As Merlin spoke, Arthur altered his sketch, and the day wore on. Sensations overwhelming him, bringing him so close to release, hands and lips moving, postponing his climax once more, biting down on a nipple and eliciting a gasp, discovering that there are breathless moans in response to a slow lick along the collarbone every time. Arthur put the finished drawing aside at some point and simply sat and listened to Merlin speak instead. The other boy had an enthusiasm for the world around him that Arthur found fascinating. He supposed Merlin was similarly enthralled with Arthur's dedication to his training. Certainly, Arthur knew his own eyes lit up during a joust or one of the other combative sports he took regular part in, and there had been many occasions on which he had spoken of swordplay with just as much animation as Merlin was speaking of nature now. Before he even knew what he was doing, Arthur was moving towards the other boy, pulling him flush against himself and cutting off his words with a kiss. It seemed to him that Merlin took an inordinately long time to work out what was happening. He was not aware of having thought of Merlin in this way before, and the kiss had gone on far longer than Arthur had intended. Finally, Merlin pushed him away. He expected anger, but Merlin rarely met his expectations, and Arthur was instead met with a small half-smile that was almost impossibly sad. Merlin looked at him for a long moment, his expression that of a man who has long since given up hope. There were questions and half-formed promises, but Merlin gave only negations in reply. That one word repeated over and over, rejecting all that Arthur offered. Merlin didn't want material possessions, not in exchange for this, and Arthur eventually ran out of reasons why the manservant should accept them. He cast aside for something else to think about, anything else to focus on, and his eyes came to rest on the drawing he had done for Morgana, the latest in a series of personal favors he had been making for her for years, under the guise of atonement. Arthur looked at the sheet of vellum with its finished sketch, and he understood. There was nothing he could make for Merlin, no embroidery or drawing to appease him. Instead, Arthur talked, more openly than he had ever done, letting Merlin in and pushing aside the barriers that had been in place for as long as he could remember. Taking one finger slowly into his mouth and sucking, gently at first and then harder, licking a trail along delicious hip bones, kissing the delicate crevice between groin and thigh, fingertips stroking so softly along his cock, aching. Arthur talked and Merlin listened, and when he was finished, Arthur was surprised to find that Merlin had somehow made his way to his side. He felt drained and exhausted and spent, but was rejuvenated by the gaze Merlin was bestowing upon him. The forlorn hopelessness was gone, replaced by a sort of longing, a burning hunger that Arthur yearned to sate. He was just leaning in to kiss Merlin when Merlin kissed him. Merlin's mouth was a searing heat on his own, and Arthur welcomed it with the air of one who has long been without something vital, like water, like oxygen. Probing fingers lubricated with the spit and sweat of both of them, and then he is inside, thrusting, their bodies jerking together, the intensity of feeling too great for an attempt at moving in time. Hands and lips again, those devastating eyes meeting his own. And then he is coming apart, they both are, a post-climatic haze of euphoria. Arthur has long been aware that his actions have consequences. Uther has always been strict, and the challenges Morgana sets him are repercussions too, albeit of a different sort. So Arthur knows about consequences. But it was Merlin who taught him that some consequences are thoroughly enjoyable, and as they lay together in the grass, Arthur relished in this newfound knowledge. The end.